You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
you gonna do?
Do you really think that?
Do you think it all?
Yeah. Our government cares about you.
They ain't giving up a second thought about you. No. Ghetto people.
Who you gonna turn to next?
Tell me. You gotta take a look at yourself, yeah. Get some people.
Where do you wanna be?
Where you wanna
tell
be?
Me why your life is.
What's with your life?
Running like a rare disease.
Running like a rare disease. Get some people.
Stop giving up yourself.
Stop doing what you're doing to yourself, yeah. You gotta learn to love yourself.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and in honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything was well with you today. Hope you're going to get a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, must do, can do, and will do today. And hope the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But of course, if it is not, and you know it has to be done and must get done and will get done because you're going to do it. And you'll do it safely. And we appreciate that. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. At the top of the page, you'll see podcasts. Click on that. In the drop down, you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that. And there will be programs that are dated and titled. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening Media, on Mondays from 6 to 8, all times are going to give our Eastern times, and from 6 to 8 p.m., Acres of Diamonds, public affairs programming with Brother Jihad Ahmed, and that's followed by from 8 to 9, Black Therapy Central with Dr. Mawia Kamban and Nataki Kamban, and then from 9 to 10, Conversations, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey of Encobra. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10, from 8 to 10 on Tuesdays. On Wednesdays from 8 to 9, the Black Farmers Report. Black Farmers Report on Wednesdays from 8 to 9. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m., if it's Friday, it's 8 p.m. Eastern Time. That's right, brothers and sisters. It's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. On Saturdays, from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m., Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers. And then on Saturday evening, from 7 to 9 p.m., the Sankofa Elders Council. Sunday at 7 p.m., once again, it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We Buy Black. We Buy Black, the largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses, is WeBuyBlack.com. You can get everything you need from American African-owned businesses from WeBuyBlack.com. In fact, depending upon how much you get, there'll be free shipping. So check out WeBuyBlack.com. Africa for the Africans, Brother Bomani Tahimba, has taken many of our people across the ocean, across the pond, to the motherland, well over 400 at that time. And he has a trip upcoming to Tanzania, November 18th to the 29th to Tanzania. And then December 24th to January 5th, 2022, to Ghana. April 1st to April 11th, 2022, to Senegal and Gambia. And then May 24th to June 5th, 2022, going again to Ghana. Brothers and sisters, put a down payment down, pay on it, and you too will have a trip of a lifetime. Everything you need is right there at the website of Africa40Africans.org. But if you want to see pictures of previous tours, go to Facebook.com/Bomani. If you want to see videos of previous tours, go to YouTube.com/Bomani2007. That is Africa40Africans.org. Usually at this time I announce Baba Noka Rashidi and his website. And as you know, for those who probably are listening, and he made his transition while he was in Kemet 2 days ago. He made his transition. Yeah. He was a friend of mine. I consider him a friend. I believe he considered me a friend. I've known him for a long time. I used to talk about the the VHS tape I had of Le Grand Clague, When Black Men Rule. He was in it along with Dr. Finch, and he was talking about African antiquity, When Black Men Ruled. And then, of course, I met him at an ASCAC conference. We've been friends ever since, along with Sister Josephine Hill of the Wisconsin Black, the African American Women's Center, who has gone on many trips with Renoco. She did not know that he had transitioned. And when I called her, I just hated to give her that devastating news, because she had gone on many trips, as well as Brother Mickey Dean, who did not know either. You know, Mickey Dean has been a guest on this program a number of times and will be in the future. But he has gone to many trips with Baba Renoco. And so I'm not going to do a serious tribute to him. I'm just going to talk about him today. And a serious tribute will be forthcoming. And I talked about him and Glenn Ford. Glenn Ford of Black Agenda Report. And I remember hearing Glenn Ford commentary for many years on the radio in his distinctive voice. He made his transition a few days before Renoco. Glenn Ford was 71 and Renoco was 66, I think. But anyway, let me finish with these announcements so I can get to it, and I'll be back with talking about Baba Renoco. And so, Habashah. HabashahIncorporated.org. HabashahIncorporated stands for helping Africa by establishing schools at home and abroad. Establishing schools right there in the continent and throughout the diaspora. It is a Pan-African organization that cultivates leadership in youth and families through practical experiences in cultural education, sustainable agriculture, entrepreneurship, and holistic health and technology. Go to their website, HabashahIncorporated.org. The Ledge Group. Land for the environmental development of group economics. The Ledge Group. Brothers and sisters, go to theledgegroup.com. They deal with the four areas of human existence, of food, water, clothing, and shelter. They have 12 different programs on the continent. They have 12 different projects in 6 countries on the continent with over 170 employed and over 260 members. You need to become a member. Because if you become a member of the Ledge Group, you will have the opportunity to buy land at $125 an acre in Tanzania. Yes, right. I know. Africa. Yes, right, brothers and sisters. Africa. Bibi Atumi. ABIBITUMI.com. BibiAtumi.com. Brothers and sisters, go to BibiAtumi.com. Jump on that homepage. Let it be something that you go to all the time for shopping, for news, information, the forums, the crowdfunding, BibiAtumi.com. Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar, located in the West End here in Atlanta, Georgia. Wadada's for delicious smoothies and health drinks and pastries and all kinds of good stuff, soups. Go to Wadada's. They also, on the weekends, they have vegan food. They serve vegan food. And, you know, they're right across the street from the Shrine of the Black Madonna. Excuse me, they're up the street from the Shrine of the Black Madonna. But, of course, the Shrine is open on Fridays and Saturdays from 1 to 7. Fridays and Saturdays, and the my good brother Ross Marvin with the UNIA will be collaborating with the Shrine for Marcus Garvey Commemorative Festival. That is Saturday, August 14th in the West End, the Shrine of the Black Madonna. If you are interested in booth space or vending, please give them a call at 404-254-5122. That's 404-254-5122. That is going to be Saturday from 1 to 7 at the Shrine of the Black Madonna. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall, Mama Nia. I talked with her, and she's doing well. She hopes to start to have some programs, and one of the persons she talked to me about was Mama Baina. Baina Bello, and to talk about Haiti and the sheroes of the Haitian Revolution. But if you are in the Atlanta area, stop by the Greenbrier Mall and stop by and see Mama Nia. If you are not, but you need a book or you want a book, give her a call at 404-346-3263. That's 404-346-3263. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. The Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore in Lithonia, Brother Gazimdi Ajamu, right there on Main Street in Lithonia. He has books, the Red, Black, and Green Shoes. He has all kind of good stuff. He has a coffee bar serving delicious African coffees and teas, bean pies. Right on, Brother Gazimdi Ajamu. Give him a call at 404-519-8107. That's 404-519-8107. The Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore. Brothers and sisters, there is light in the Black Dot. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa. Cooperative economics, or as we like to say, family-centered economics. Tomorrow night, the Thursday night broadcast, every Thursday night from 9 to 10 p.m., from 9 to 10 p.m. on Blog Talk Radio. Go to blogtalkradio.com/ULU. So that's where you can listen online. But if you want to listen, use your phone just to listen. You can do that by dialing 929-477-2789. That's 929-477-2789. But if you want to ask a question or comment, when you dial that, hit that one. It'll put you up there, and you can get your question, comment, or concern at Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa. Sun Goddess Scents. Sun Goddess Scents, your one-stop natural shop located 4140 Jonesboro Road in Forest Park, Georgia. Inside the International Discount Mall, booth 225. Brothers and sisters, contact my dear friend Shelly Amonsette at 404-434-7963. That's 404-434-7963. Sun Goddess Scent, your one-stop natural shop. Sanjay Dash Haiti, Sister Gabrielle Aurelia is doing the outstanding work with young children in the rural area up in the hills in the northeastern portion of Haiti. And as you know, they're going through all kinds of stuff in Haiti. So believe me, she needs support. Go to her website at Sanjay, S-O-N-J-E dash Haiti, A-Y-I-T-I.org, Sanjay Dash Haiti.org. Akaban Institute and Baba Baruti and Mama Yah. Next week they have a, are you playing checkers or are you playing chess? That's next week. And Inya is, her portion of it is healing. Brothers and sisters, go to Akaban House for books And he's a prolific writer. Go to AkabinHouse.com. AkabinHouse.com. Yeah, you can see I'm just moving on slow, brother. This is really tough for me. This is really tough, brothers and sisters. It really is. With somebody that you consider, and who I consider a very viable, necessary person because of the work that he is doing or has done and continues to do. Man, very necessary. He was a primary researcher. Can't get too many of those. Let's take some serious sacrifice, you know. I know he had a daughter, and she was in Paris. I'm not sure. I don't know a lot of personal things about Rinoco. Don't really care, because I just loved him for the man that he is and the work that he has done. Appreciate him so much. The Inye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. The Inye Sesim. August 3rd. The promotion and enhancement of life is central principle of African traditional morality, and the goal of all moral conduct is fullness of life. Human life is considered full in Africa when it is marked by spiritual, material, and social blessings. When the network of relationships with the spiritual, human, and material being is as it should be, if one is therefore lacking in any of the basic things that are considered essential to life in an African society, like good health, wife or husband, children, means of sustenance in one's family, or if one, through processing these things, does not enjoy a good relationship with other members of the community, living or dead, one cannot be said to have peace. Mere material wealth or progress that is not accompanied by any integral moral life is neither regarded as fullness of life, nor is it envied in traditional African societies. Any action that is capable of hindering another from attaining the fullness of life is considered a breach of peace. A selfish or unjust person, even when he or she is not violent, is antisocial and therefore regarded by the Africans as an enemy of peace. Afia Sakia. Like any other cultural trait, individualism progresses. For Africans operating within Yoruba's reality, this progression is a negative one. It moves us against our humanity. In traditional African society, it is conceptualized and acts differently. In a state of mind that moves one to be the best representation of their gifts in order to improve the quality of communal life. When lost in Yoruba's "I am because I am" self-centeredism, most of us spend so much time trying to be seen that we miss life. Nothing exists outside of them except it recognizing and attaining to into their presence. Affirm, my life is full and I am at peace. Ashe. Affirm, my life is full and I am at peace. Ashe. August 4th, stealers of land, stealers of entire continents cannot teach people about God, cannot teach democracy. My friend and good sister from Haiti, Baina Bello. Those without humanity cannot teach what it means to be human. Teaching requires being. Otherwise, it is not teaching. It is merely sterile dictative instructions. Those without humanity cannot teach civilization, for they would require having mastered the art of honest civility, of defining civil in respectful human terms and applying it from the heart. They cannot teach society, for society is not the mechanical interaction of those who hate each other so much that they can only be internally xenophobic. Society is more than a group of aggregates. It is the collective embrace of persons ever practicing and perfecting benevolence for the least of us. That's beautiful. It is, let me read it again, is the collective embrace of persons ever perfecting benevolence for the least of us. It is a spiritual formation which requires perseverance within selflessness. Having spent an existence fragmenting into the image of its manipulative extreme individualism, Urugu cannot teach family. Their best hope is to destroy it so thoroughly in others that they no longer know how family feels. They definitely cannot teach love, for it demands knowing the divinity within, something despiritualized beings are utterly incapable of doing. Compassion, an extension of love, also remains far behind their capabilities. They can never teach tolerance because except to make others tolerant of them, it is foreign to their sensibilities. Therefore, it can only be fringed in a rational effort to maintain leverage over others, forcing to live among them in a displaced peace. All in all, they cannot teach Ma'at except in some imitative way. They can never teach its essence because spirit must be lived to be known, and we know that they cannot teach what they do not know. Ashe, I know divinity. Affirm, I know divinity. The Inye Sesem of Daily Revolutionary Thought. Your philosophy determines your thought pattern. Your thought pattern determines your attitude. Your attitude determines your behavior pattern, and your behavior pattern determines your actions. It begins with what you think, your philosophy, and it ends with what you do, your actions. So if your philosophy is that we as African people are inferior, unintelligent, incapable, then your actions will treat us as such. But if your philosophy is that African people, men and women, have knowledge, foresight, philosophy, ingenuity, have brought the world, have brought to the world, then you will treat them with respect and honor and reverence. That's your philosophy. Those will be your actions. What you do for yourself depends upon what you think of yourself. And what you think of yourself depends upon what you know of yourself. And what you know of yourself depends upon what you have been told. I'm going to come back to that. We must not be the people who walked but left no footprints, who talked but had nothing meaningful to say, who labored but built nothing for themselves. And so we lay at your feet the builder's spade and shovel, the mason's tall and square, Africa's books of great wisdom. Go now and build for eternity. Brother Lester Velt Middleton. Brother Lester Velt Middleton built a home in North Carolina, literally. Literally. He interviewed the greatest of our scholars. The greatest of our scholars. He made a transition very early in life, unfortunately. Go to YouTube, put in Lester Velt Middleton, and you can hear the ancestors speak. The quote previous, what you do for yourself depends upon what you think of yourself. And what you think of yourself depends upon what you know of yourself. And what you know of yourself depends upon what you have been told. Renoko, in the Hidden Colors series, when when he was on the Hidden Colors series. Towards the end of the program, towards the end of it, he did that quote, it is not his, but he is credited. I can't remember the brother, the doctor, that it is his quote, but it's depending upon what you've been told. And Baba Rinoko has been trying to tell us who we are. He's trying to his best to eliminate all the negativity, all the ignorance, all the falsehood, all the lies from antiquity to the present. He has literally gone around the world documenting the African presence around the world. Who will step up now? Who will step up and do the work, the sacrificial work that Baba Rinoko Rashidi was doing? That's why I supported him. I appreciated him. Had a lot of admiration and love and respect for him. Like I said, I first saw him in the documentary When Black Men Rule with LeGrand Clegg, a series that he put out. Brother LeGrand Clegg is a attorney, city attorney of Compton, California. Good brother, member of ASCAC. And he put that out there. I mean, I think it had to be early 90s. And so that's how I went to an ASCAC conference and Rinoko was there and I introduced myself to him. We've been friends ever since. We hung out. He came to Milwaukee a number of times. We hung out. I went to L.A. when they had the street festival, the large street festival, and hung out with him. You know, he was a no-nonsense kind of brother. And I know that when he's been on this program, we just had conversation, you know? We just had conversation. It was a pleasure. For some of you, I'm going to play, like I said, we're going to talk today, the first half, about Rinoko. And then we're going to talk about Glenn Ford. Glenn Ford of Black Agenda Report. You know? And so, man, I'm going to play this one particular piece here. I'm going to play two of them, about 10 minutes long. So you can hear Dr. Rinoko Rashidi.
So, you are a historian and anthropologist. So how did your journey begin as a historian and anthropologist? I know you were exposed to the information at a young age, but how did your journey actually begin with you taking that serious and you getting into the field? And who inspired you? Who are the historians or the anthropologists that inspired you?
Well, I already told you about Chancellor Williams. That was the biggest one, really. And the reason for that is because this is the first time I studied somebody who not only said we had a history before enslavement, which was news to me at a young age, but also that African people began to travel out of Africa tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of years before slavery. Say what? That black people went to India and China and Australia and America before Columbus? Are you serious? So I knew. You know, I wanted to find out what happened to those sisters and brothers. Did they just disappear? Did they found civilizations in those places? And so after that, I guess it was Sheikh Anta Diop, the great scholar from Senegal, and Joseph Binyakinen and John Henry Clark. A man named John G. Jackson was instrumental. And then along came Ivan Van Sertima. And I even have a photograph of Ivan I'm going to show you when we do the pictures. But those are some of the badass historians that I interacted with and who shaped and molded me, and I wanted to be like them.
Right. Now, that's amazing. So, like, how did you get the chance to work with these historians? Because, like, people in my position or others, and we're looking at historians such as yourself, we're wondering, okay, how do we build these relationships? So how were you actually able to connect with these historians and build relationships with them?
That's a very good question. And here's an answer I never thought I would give before. But they kind of wanted to work with me. Why? Same reason I want to work with you. You see something in a younger person. You see potential. You see intelligence. They seem driven. And they want to. They not only admire you, but they want to do something too. They have that same kind of fire. So you nurture that. And I think that that's what some of those scholars did to me. So like as far back as 1982, I was only about 30 at the time. I started working for, no, I'm not even that old. Anyway, I started working for Man Serdum. I started writing for him in a book called, it was on the African presence in Sumer in Iraq and Iran. So I did that. Mm-hmm. Something on the African presence in Asia. Nobody, not too many people were doing that. And then he said, look, Renoco, this is Ivan Van Sertima talking. We're going to do another book, an anthology with a lot of contributors on Black women in antiquity. It's an important market. And we need to celebrate Black women. Well, I jumped on that because I love Black women. Right. And so he says, I want you to write an article. You did pretty good in the last one. You know, write something on African goddesses. So I said, okay. So he says, as a matter of fact, there's another author who is doing an essay in the same book on Isis. So let me send you the essay so you guys don't overlap. And I got the essay, and to be honest with you, I wasn't all that impressed by it. And I edited it in such a manner that ours didn't conflict. And sent it to him. He said, wow, and you can edit too. And I said, yeah. So we began a relationship like that. And I became Ivan's most prolific student. I like to think his best student, but that would really, really be on the arrogant side. But certainly I wrote more for Ivan than anybody else. I was able to travel to Egypt with Yosef Ben Yochanan on four occasions. I spent a lot of quality time with John Henry Clark. Their attitude seemed to be, if we find bright young Africans, nurture them and be willing to spend time with them, and we'll see how they blossom and develop. And I did pretty good, I guess you might say.
Yes.
Yes,
yes you did, real brother. Yes, you did. Yeah. Here's another piece that I want to play. You know, I'm telling you, man, this is breaking me up, y'all. I know y'all. I hope y'all know that.
Claim your homeowner stimulus today.
Sorry for the
program is giving advertisement. Up to $3,708 every year.
Yes, sir.
Wow. You know, if not for this pandemic, I never would have heard of Zoom and StreamYard and all of this stuff. So in a sense, it's been a blessing. All right, we don't have any time. We're going to go through these quick. I start a lot of my presentations with this, and this tells it all to me. I'm going to tell my children their story does not begin with slavery. And let's start there, all right? And I guess that this is a depiction of Mansa Musa, the Sultan, the mighty Sultan of the Mali Empire. Now, this is Ivan Van Sertima. This is when Renoco Rashidi was young and handsome. Now I'm old and handsome. And this is Ivan Van Sertima, who was the author of They Came Before Columbus. His major focus was the African presence in ancient America. And I know you wanted me to touch on that. The two areas that I really want to look at briefly, as you requested, is a brief synopsis of the African presence in Asia and a brief synopsis of Africans in America before Christopher Columbus, in other words, before slavery. Now, since we're African-centered, we're going to look at the part of Asia closest to Africa and move ourselves east. And in addition to that, we are going to start with the most remote periods and work our way up. So this one takes us to the Arabian Peninsula. This is the great hero of pre-Islamic Arabia. His name is Antara ibn Shaddad, called Antara the Lion. He is a dashing knight and poet. He's the father of chivalry in the Arab world. He's a bad brother. His mother was Ethiopian. His father was Arab. And then this takes us to Israel. And this is a depiction of a scene 2,700 years ago in a Judean city called Lachish. And these were the inhabitants, black folk in what is now Israel 2,700 years ago. This is in the British Museum. Most of the photographs I'm going to show you, with some exceptions, are my museum photographs. Obviously, others are not original pictures. This is a photograph or photographs meshed together from a book called The Origin of Races by a guy named Carlton Coon. Yes, Carlton S. Coon, written about 1950. And he was one of the preeminent anthropologists, a racist, but a preeminent scholar nevertheless. And this is what he said the first people of the Arabian Peninsula looked like.
Okay.
This one takes us to Iran. This is a photograph of one of the figures called the Immortals. The Immortals were the imperial bodyguard of the Persian emperors 2,500 years ago. This is in the Louvre in Paris. And then these are some black folk in Asia today. This is a sister in Yemen. This is what the first people of South Asia look like. And these are some of the black folk in India today, particularly Southeast India. This is a whole nother black population from India, Nepal, a brother that I met from Bangladesh. It looks like we are brothers. Now, some people say we're Noka Rashidi. These are just dark-skinned Asians. And I take umbrage of that. That implies if we had applied that same rule, I'm a dark-skinned American. No, I'm a black man in America. These are black people in Asia. It's the same thing. We just exist all over the world. In China, you have an African presence at the dawn of Chinese civilization. This is a bronze libation vessel of a tiger protecting a little black man in the Shang Dynasty. And this is a black man in the Yuan Dynasty of China. This is a depiction of Bodhidharma, the man who took credited with taking martial arts and Taoism, okay, I believe, from India to the Far East. These are all from China. And then these images are from Japan. This is Fudo Maya, one of the five wisdom kings in Japanese mythology, and the patron of the samurai. There are two proverbs that have been used to suggest an African presence in Japan. One says, for a samurai to be brave, he must have a bit of black blood. The other says, to make a good samurai, half the blood in one's veins must be black. And here is a piece from Southeast Asia. And this is from Cambodia. Now, I ask you, people would say, Renoko, you tripping. These aren't really black people. Let me just ask you, basically, do these look like the features of a black person? Now, if you say, yeah, we can talk. If you say no, I figure, what's the point? If you cannot see what is right before your eyes, then let me just move on. This is from Cambodia. This is 800 years old. This is the face of a black Khmer king.
Okay.
And this is what is in the temples of Angkor Wat in Cambodia. And here's an image of a Buddha from Vietnam, 1,000 years old. And another depiction of a deity in Vietnam, 1,000 years old. This one is in Thailand, 1,500 years old. Images of the Buddha, 1,500 years old in Thailand. Look at these, my brother. Look.
Look like black people.
Yeah, you think? In the Philippines. Don't starve me, man. In the Philippines, these are the original people. And you can see the comparison with this fine sister, this African-American actress. I think she's gorgeous, man.
Mm-hmm.
And these are black folk in the Philippines. All right.
Yeah. My good brother, Renoka Rashidi. Love him. Love him, miss him. Yeah. I'm gonna tell you. They have a little bit of a bit that they have for Renoko. Renoko's death is unknown, although many have said it was a heart attack. We don't know yet. This hasn't been stated by his family. He died giving a tour in Kemet, doing something he loved, just like Dr. Ace Hilliard died in Kemet giving a tour. Great scholar, rest in peace, Noko Rashidi. This is from God, the good king. I never seen him get hyped or argue with anybody. I can respect that. If you agree with his work or not, we all can agree. He was dedicated. The next generation step up. It is on us. Carry on his traditions. Some good pictures of him at times, him with Dr. Clark, him with Dr. Ben, him lecturing, him at a young age. Immense love and tribute have been flooded on social media sites for historian Dr. Manoko Rashidi. Rashidi's family details remain a mystery or not unknown. Most curious to know about his private life, but he hasn't shared anything on a bio. So, like I said, I never knew. I knew he had a daughter in Paris. I knew he was dedicated. He was dedicated to reclaiming, recapturing, restoring the history of our people, and would go, literally go, to see for himself. When I visited him, his library, it was just books everywhere, on the floor, on the table, not just in bookcases, which there were many, but yeah, books. You know, it's extremely hard to, if you don't know about Renoko, and we know he has a daughter, I said, according to his bio, Renoko has worked with and under some of the most distinguished scholars of the past half century. As you heard him talk about it with affection, Dr. Ivan van Sertima, you know, in his book that came before Columbus, which many had considered very controversial, because the hypothesis was that we left out of Africa and we sailed west on the Atlantic Ocean and arrived here. When they put out, he came before Columbus, we sailed past the islands, the Caribbeans. We sailed past Maine, the continent of North America, and the continent of South America, to go into the Gulf, to land on what is now the Yucatan Peninsula of Mexico, where they believe that the first civilization in this hemisphere was created, the Olmecs. And the documentation and the visualization of the Olmec heads, in fact, a couple of them were found within the last 10 or 15 years, let alone way back when. Because he had pictures of them. He had pictures of the one that had braids, the Olmecs, and of course, undeniably, they're African. Their features are Africoid. My contention is they were the humans, the men and women and children of that area, honored and revered those Africans that came there, because unlike Europeans who come places to manipulate, to undermine, and eventually to eliminate and to take, just as in Raoul Peck's outstanding documentary in four parts, Exterminate All the Brutes. He says that begins with civilization, colonization, that's the European. Extermination, that's the European. We didn't do that. We came to share. We came to enlighten. We came to help. We didn't come to take. Renoko has worked with many scholars, Dr. John Henry Clark, Asa Hilliard, Edward Scobie, John G. Jackson, Juan Cruz, and Dr. Joseph Ben Jokanen. Renoko was 67 years old. He was born in 1954 It is sad to know that Brunoco has passed away at 67, and all of his loved ones are currently mourning his death. Yes, we are. Further, Brunoco has successfully achieved have his bio details written on the pages of Wikipedia. I haven't seen it, you know. In fact, I was hoping to go there to Wikipedia. There wasn't nothing there, even nor on Glenn Ford. Renoco's net worth, don't know. You know, he made the sacrifice, brother and sister. No, he had no money. He had no wealth. Yes, he wrote, almost 20 books. And a lot of the books that he wrote, it is not like the novels. Everybody wants to read it. It's salacious. Oh, is that? No. It was information about who we are. Substantiating. Making clear about who we are and what we're about and what we have done. He was a famous historian, along with holding various titles like essayist, author, activist, researcher. You know, that's his worth. He lived a good life and was keen on working on many projects that included history and other studies. I like that picture of him with the young brothers, showing the camera, having them point to the camera so they can smile. Yeah. Such a name, Teresa Dobson, who was supportive of Renoco. Renoco was also a member of the editorial board of Africology, the Journal of Pan-African Studies. In addition, Renoco earned an honorary doctorate of divinity from Amun-Ra Theological Seminary. Amun-Ra. Brothers and sisters, like I said, I love this man. He's a good brother. He's a good brother. I valued our friendship. Well, anytime you can hook up with a scholar, an African-centered scholar, somebody who has made the sacrifice and have done the work, and that is recognized by our people. Like he used to say, I don't give a damn if they don't, as long as we do. He was a member of ASCAC. I don't know what happened. I never asked. I've never talked about it. But apparently there was some kind of fallout, you know, between ASCAC. I don't know if that, because he was still Sister Nzinga. Radebisi Haru was still the chairperson of ASCAC when he got out. You know, because after him is Dr. Mario Beatty, who is a professor of Africology, along with Gray Kamathi Carr at Howard University. Renoco is the main author of an introduction to the study of African classical civilizations and the editor of Unchained African Voices. He has also traveled and visited 124 countries, as Renoco also worked as a researcher. Likewise, Renoco has spoken in, he has did a presentation in 67 countries by giving lectures on and being a presenter. His main prior mission, Renoco wanted to improve and uplift African people, all living in their homeland and abroad. Renoco's death is, you know, it's just really, really tough. It's really tough. He died August 2nd. Similarly, immense love and tributes have been flooding in on the social media site. And I went to his website. His website. Sometimes people say, but Renoco, I don't just love black people. I don't just love black women. I love everybody. Well, that is admirable. But there's also such a thing as loyalty to your roots and loyalty to your community. Have you abandoned that? Would you abandon that? Would you? We need you, brothers and sisters. Our community needs us. You should look. You would look the other way. Was your mother not a black woman? What kind of men are you? Are you lost and confused? I hear you, Renoco. I hear you, dear brother. We're going to take a break. Let me come back from the break. As I said, I'm going to do a tribute to Baba Renoco Rashidi when I get it all planned out and so forth. But when we come back from the break, Glenn Ford made his transition the 28th of July. He was 71. And BlackAgendaReport.com. Black Agenda Report. And his distinct voice. I remember listening to radio stations, our radio stations, and he would come on with commentary on various things. Glenn Ford. We'll be right back, brothers and sisters. You stay with us. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. You stay with us. We'll be right back.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
You're listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. The Jazz Crusaders, Wilton Feltner and all those brothers, good brothers, the Jazz Crusaders, stomping and buck dancing. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening Media on Mondays from 6 to 8 p.m., Acres of Diamonds, Public Affairs Programming out of Philadelphia, Brother Jahad Ahmed. And that's followed by, from 8 p.m. to 9 p.m., Black Therapy Central with Dr. Mawia Kamban and Itaki Kamban. And then from 9 to 10, Conversations, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. And then on Wednesdays, the Black Farmers Report from 8 to 9 on Wednesdays this evening. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard at 8 p.m. on Fridays. Saturdays from 4 to 6, Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers. And then from 7 to 9, the Sankofa Elders Council from 7 to 9. And then on Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern, it's Time for an Awakening once again with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. You know, I didn't see much on Brother Glenn Ford. I saw that today, this morning. Didn't know that he had passed. Or last night, excuse me. I saw that last night that he had passed. And just recently got the date that he had passed, which was the 28th of last month of July. And I remember listening to hearing his commentary on various radio programs, you know, that catered to our audience before he done a Black Agenda Report. And initially when I started this radio program, I utilized Black Agenda Report, Your Black World, what is that in Atlanta? Oh, man, come on, Oshi, see? I used that. And, of course, The Final Call. I used a lot of articles from The Final Call. Today, I whatever resources I can get on the internet that I think that is relevant, that is pertinent, and that is pertinent and something that I definitely want to bring to our community. But even at then, you know, because Black Agenda Report, I like them because they were hard-hitting and they were anti-establishment, Democrat or Republican. They were anti-establishment. They knew that the Republican Party and the Democratic Party are just different wings of the same filthy, nasty-ass bird. And they treated them as such. The other, Kimberly, Sister Kimberly, who's one of the reporters, and the Asian dude, they were all great. They were all good. And I know that they were sincere in their efforts. Here is a piece that Brother Glenn talking about breaking from the Democratic Party.
Let's say up front that capitalism is dying. It is dying of its own contradictions. And much of our job is to make sure that it doesn't kill all of us as it goes on the way to the cemetery. In terms of looking forward and what we need to do, I'm going to address that in encapsulated fashion as well. Number one, of course, we need a mass movement. But we have been without a movement for so long that people do not even have a memory of what it was to have a movement, to have people arguing so intensely that sometimes it came to gunfire about what direction Black people were going to take. Now, of course, we're not advocating that Black folks turn their guns on each other, but the intensity of the argument that many of us are old enough to have experienced was a mark of a mature and healthy black polity. The kind of non-dialogue that we see going on now, it seems to be a repeat of catchphrases and talking points that folks get from CNN and MSNBC. That is no political dialogue whatsoever, and it shows a very unhealthy society. A couple of years back, I had a debate with Michael Eric Dyson on Democracy Now! And Dyson kept on saying something strange. He said, you got to be in the game. You got to be in the game. And it became very clear that he and other black misleadership class members think that this is a game in a real sense. They look at struggle not as something that masses of people join in order to effectuate change for the betterment of the entire group. They look at struggle as something that is individual. It is maneuvering by them and their buddies and whoever they can get into some kind of conspiracy for mobility with. Maneuvering for position, maneuvering for advantage. And in that kind of game, as they see it, we are all just pawns. And that explains their political behavior. So the number two thing that we must do, and I do think this leads to that, is to break with the Democratic Party. Because this is the vehicle in which they play those games. And that game, like a game of Monopoly, it's dominated by the bank. And in this case, in the Democratic Party, literally by the banks. This is nothing new, the Democratic Party's relationship to finance capital. For a very long time, the Wall Street has been to the Democratic Party what big energy, Texaco and Exxon, have been to the Republican Party. And that intimate relationship has done nothing but intensify in recent years, and especially under Obama, who is the perfect servant of Wall Street. Save their butt. Remember that George Bush's bailout failed on the Monday when it came up for a vote in October. It took the shining knight candidate, Barack Obama, to fly in, to suspend his campaign and fly in and talk to Democrats, and by Friday that vote was reversed. Barack Obama saved the banks. They know it, and he knows it, and he will be rewarded in his after presidential life expensively for it. The third point, I think, is that we have to organize against the banks, that as the main enemy. And this is not part of some political game. I don't think it is something that's done for strategic reasons solely, but because the banks are the enemy. The enemy of the world is concentrated finance capital. Concentrated finance capital now totally dominates manufacturing capital. When I was a kid, people used to say, what's good for General Motors, this giant manufacturing company, is good for the country. It wasn't true then, but it had validity in the sense that General Motors, a big manufacturing, was in the catbird seat in terms of political influence, but also in terms of the United States being the greatest industrial power in the world at that time. Now all of the manufacturing industries are totally subordinate, are owned by, are just parcels to be bought and sold by big capital. So capital is the enemy. But strategically speaking, I think it is the best approach in terms of building a mass movement that is multiracial as well, to target the banks, because everybody hates the banks. Everybody hates the banks. And I firmly believe that if the Occupy Wall Street movement, had articulated a position of decapitation of the banks, rather than just sloganizing and getting people to, well, feel badly about the banks. People didn't really need to be coaxed and urged to feel badly about the banks. They want to hear how we can get rid of them. And that's the way I believe towards a movement. But the discussion, the theme of the evening was the black misleadership class. And I got my much of my political education from reading the volumes of Herbert Aptheker, who dedicated much of his life to creating the multi-volume History of the Negro in the United States. And it is a treasure because Aptheker did not intrude on the documents that he amassed. He acted as an editor, and he put them in the proper order. And there was a world of information on black political life historically in there. If you read it from cover to cover, you read it over and over again. And I remember a little vignette from a document that he found. It came from 1890s New Orleans. And the center of the document was a petition that had been circulated by a Negro group of the day composed of upwardly mobile strivers, the better class of colored folks in New Orleans. And they were petitioning the white mayor. Remember, Reconstruction is long gone in New Orleans by this time. They were petitioning the white mayor not to allow the female prisoners from the city jail to clean the streets in daylight. If they were going to clean the streets, have them do it at night. Now, you might think that their concern was for the conditions of these women prisoners, almost all of whom were black. But that was not their concern. Their concern was that these prisoners cleaning the streets in daylight made the better class of colored folks look bad. And that was the black misleadership class of New Orleans in 1890. They didn't give a damn about those women who might rather be out in the sunlight than in the dungeons that New Orleans prisons were during that time. Or maybe they wouldn't, but these good colored folks of the era were not concerned about these female inmates' opinion. They were concerned about their own image. And we have those same kinds of jerks in control of our political community today. We at Black Agenda Report believe that the two greatest challenges, domestically certainly, to black people in this country are gentrification and mass incarceration. Mass incarceration obviously has deformed and disfigured our communities so that it becomes much, much more difficult to organize. And we could go on forever about the sins of mass incarceration. Gentrification is a threat to our ability to organize in concentrated numbers. And the window on the black city is rapidly closing. We don't have much time left before the whole issue of what do you do with Chocolate City becomes moot because there won't be any more. So how has the black misleadership class dealt with those two, we believe, greatest challenges? Let's talk about mass incarceration first. Most folks don't know that when that 100-to-1 crack cocaine bill was passed in 1986, half of the Congressional Black Caucus voted for it. And about half of those who voted for it are still there. But they don't fess up to that they were part of the whole hysteria that was whipped up by the Reagan administration about a crack epidemic that had, in the early 80s, not yet fully formed. As Michelle Alexander explained in the New Jim Crow, the whole effort to create the anti-crack hysteria was, as always it is, in order to make black folks the scapegoat for whatever was wrong with the country. But we see that these black politicians in the caucus were willing actors in this whole charade that resulted in a bill that put hundreds of thousands of black people behind bars for decades. That's the kind of behavior that we get from them. I've concluded that this black misleadership class is more ashamed, just as those New Orleans good colored folk were, more ashamed about mass incarceration than outraged. And that's why they are not to be trusted in any movement to abolish this horrible penal system that we have. In terms of gentrification, gentrification could not be proceeding at the pace that we see it now were it not for the active collaboration of the black political class. I remember in D.C. About 15 years ago, the black mayor announced quite openly and without fear of any political retaliation that the city should prepare, pave the way for, open its arms to 200,000 new upscale residents. Now, who did that mean? They're talking about white people. Here we have a black mayor who is openly advocating policies that would make D.C. a non-black majority city. And today, D.C. is a non-black majority city. In Atlanta, Bruce was talking about the Olympics and how it was welcomed as some kind of great victory for this progressive black-run city. But of course, the net result was to further decrease the black majority, which I think is now just a little bit over 50%, and Atlanta will soon lose its majority. Ray Nagin, it's called ethnic cleansing, and Ray Nagin in New Orleans, the last black mayor. Some people did not become familiar with him until Katrina, and may have felt some kind of empathy for him. But he was the business and the white population's candidate for mayor of New Orleans, and did everything he could to drive poor folks out of town. Very difficult thing to do in a 70% city, a black city like New Orleans was. And then Katrina came along and did much of the job for him. And now New Orleans has a white business mayor. So these people are useless. And although it's fun for some of us to make fun of them and to call into question their character and to talk about their mama if we could, the worst thing about the black misleadership class is that they are absolutely useless to us, but their presence is quite useful to the real rulers, the banks. Thank you.
That was Glenn Ford, Black Agenda Report, and his many commentaries. You know, Glenn Ford died. He was a July 28th at age of 71. He's a pioneering journalist who founded the news site Black Agenda Report and was an outspoken critic of Barack Obama. In fact, if you can go online to YouTube, you can pull up that, because I heard it when it happened. Because sometimes I do listen to Democracy Now. And he was having a conversation with Michael Eric Dyson. And they're talking about Obama. This is like about, I think, at the beginning of Obama's presidency. You know, and because Obama was such, you know, he was so, you know, hailed. And everybody, you know, many of our people You know, that's another conversation that we need to have about that, of how our people behaved foolishly because of the presidency of Barack Obama and the fact that he didn't do a damn thing really for us collectively, you know. And, of course, the drone strikes that he was bombing. I mean, when it comes out, it's deep. Ford's colleague and protege, Margaret Kimberly, on Black Agenda Report, announced her friend's death. I'm sorry to inform you that Glenn Ford, founder of Black Agenda Report, and my friend, comrade, and Jegna have passed away. We will share more information and receive it, which is a while ago, and so she says that. Historic first, most, and only are the hallmarks of Glenn Ford's long career. His bio turned a bit reads on the Black Agenda Report website, which airs a lengthy tribute to him on July 29th. He was the consummate journalist and man who demanded rigorous analysis of himself and others. And he lived by the dictum of afflicting the comfortable and confronting the afflicted. Kimberly wrote on Turnout. Ford co-founded a publication in line with his core values. He did not suffer fools gladly, succumb to corporate media and government narratives, or feel obligated to change his politics in order to evaluate the black face in a high place. That extended to his outspoken criticism of Obama, whose merits he debated with author and activist Michael Eric Dyson on Democracy Now! In 2012. That was at the time about Obama's about to go into the second term. Taking down the then president's expansion of drone use for waging war, his creation of prevention detention, and his policies of austerity. Ford was always an uncompromising defender of African people, black people, and never shirked from explaining the mechanisms which placed that group at or in the rear or the bottom of all positive merits and metrics, and at or near the top of all the negativity. Ford's father was a famed disc jockey. Ford's father was a famous disc jockey, Rudy the Deuce Rutherford, the first American African to host a non-gospel television show in the Deep South. By the age of 11, Glenn Ford, his name was shortened in 1970 by none other than the Godfather, James Brown, when Ford worked at Augusta, Georgia radio station, was reading a copy on air. As an adult, he went on to work at local stations in Columbus, Georgia, Atlanta, Georgia, Baltimore, Maryland, and created a half-hour weekly news magazine, Black World Report. He also worked in D.C., joining the 88 station Mutual Black Network as Capitol Hill State Department and White House correspondent, as well as a Washington bureau chief. He co-launched and produced and hosted America's Black Forum in 1977. I remember America's Black Forum, the first nationally syndicated black news interview program on commercial television. He founded Black Commentator in 2003, but left that in 2006 along with Kimberly and the late Bruce Dixon of the Congressional Black Caucus Monitor to establish Black Agenda Report. He was also a founding member of the Washington chapter of the National Association of Black Journalists, executive board member of the National Alliance of Third World Journalists, and a media specialist for the National Minority Purchasing Council. In addition to being a sought-after public speaker at colleges and universities, Ford and his work touched indigenous people as well, as author and activist Nick Estes of the Lorbeau Sioux Nation noted. The last we spoke, he told me what he was like, what it was like living near Robeson County, North Carolina, how blackness and ingenuity helped politicize him. Rest in power. Brother Yestes stated, rest in power, Glenn Ford. Brothers and sisters, whoever wants to, I got a lot of people here. If you want to say something, have something to say, please hit star twice.
Let me know that you want to have conversation. You're listening to African Perspectives. Give us a call at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Mama Nabantu, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, brother. I feel you in terms of these ancestors who have made that transition. I know that with Brother
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I used to
Go ahead.
I was on his email list, and every country he went to, he would give a report if you followed that or not. Mm-hmm. But it was almost like you were there. Because he would report on every single discovery that he had made and was making throughout the world. And I always had looked forward to that. And also, I didn't know that Glenn Ford had passed until you said it on your show, because I used to follow the Black Agenda, because I love the way he critiqued everything.
What
was going on, and made, you know, it was like critical thinking process that we needed.
Right.
You know, and both of these fellows would be so missed. Yeah. And you know, during the time I was teaching school back in California, whenever any of these people came in town, I would stop everything we were doing and we would go and listen. Like when Ivan Van Sertima came to Stanford, I took my students there.
Beautiful.
And listened to his presentation, took pictures with them. Mm-hmm. Ben Yakanan came to East Palo Alto. We had a special performance. I guess it was like a conference where he had come to East Palo Alto to speak. And so these brothers, you know, I know influenced my life in terms of my coming, you know, into my Blackness as a very young person in my 20s.
Yeah.
So, you know, the challenge is, how do we share this information with our children, our grandchildren, so they will know about this history, you know? And I don't know if the Black Agenda reports, were they all put into one book, or, you know, I'm not sure. Because,
well, you know, if you go on their website, you know, and I can say I used to use blackagendareport.com to come up with topics that I would talk about. I would read from it and discuss those, you know, and some of his commentaries, you know, and even some of the audios that they provided at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah. So, I mean, you can still go there now. It's, you know, and I said there's some people that he has trained or worked with that I'm quite sure will carry on, you know, the work that he has started, you know.
What about Rashidi? All the work and all the photos.
I tell you, I don't know. Because like I said, I don't know too much about Rinoco's personal. I know he had a daughter in France. I'm not sure if it was in Paris. Might have been. I'm not sure, you know. But he has a wealth of information. Like you said, the photographs, you know, his PowerPoint presentations, you know. He literally documented the African presence around the world, no doubt about it.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you.
All right, no, thank you, Mama Nabantu. Appreciate it very much. All right, continue to listen. Thank you. All right.
All right.
404-404, good afternoon. 404-697, 404-697, good afternoon.
Hello?
Hello, how you doing?
Oh, I'm blessed. Yes, brother. I'm really moved. I just hearing the news that you spread to us, and you know, I just caught it. And when did you say that Baba Rafidi, Dr. Baba Rafidi, when did he pass?
He passed Monday morning.
Oh, well, I say ashe, 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 oh, and I'm sending you know, just prayers and blessings, send it to you. I feel you, you know, your dear friend, at the loss of your dear friend, and to all of, and sending prayers to all of us as a people, because it's the loss of a great giant.
Yeah.
However, we, you know, we empowered
yeah.
with all that he, you know, shared and brought, and how he uplifted and enlightened our lives. And so he is an awesome warrior, king, and legendary.
Yeah.
And, you know, so blessed that he touched our lives.
Yeah.
He was a warrior.
Thank you for
send out tribute, and, you know, may he rest in peace and power and love. And may we continue on with his great legacy and, you know, spread the word and uplift.
Well, you know, in the piece that I played, and he talked about when he was a young man, how he worked with Ivan von Cernima, Dr. Clark, Dr. Ben,
yes.
and that these warrior scholars, these great giant warrior scholars in our history, you know, early on, and what he continued to do, and hopefully that example that some young brothers and sisters will do what he will pick up that banner and do what he did.
Yes, you know,
that is my hope and desire, and in honor of him, I will always mention him, and I will always encourage our brothers and sisters to do the same, to take up that banner, to learn our history.
Yeah, that's an awesome message. Yes,
yeah, you know, because we need
that's very profound.
Yeah, we need.
Yeah, because I heard he said that they wanted him.
Yeah.
You know, the elders, you know, they said, how could you be so blessed
to
work with them?
Well,
you know,
especially he could edit their, he could write their stuff, edit it, and write forwards and so forth. I mean, like, wow, yeah, this brother's cool, you know? Yeah.
What a great scholar.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, sure. I say.
Okay, my sister,
thank you. And Santi for sharing with us, and we're just going to,
I'm going to do an extensive program when I get it together on Renoco, you know, because I feel that that's important, at least for me to do that, considering how I felt.
Yes, I look so forward to that.
Yeah. All right, dear. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Santa.
Okay,
stay blessed. Peace. 334-334, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Brother Oshi.
Hey, how you been, man?
Good afternoon to everyone else that's on the phone as well.
Thank you, brother.
You know, just now hearing about Glenn Ford, I was calling with respect to Bob Moses and Renoco Rashidi,
yes.
But now,
yeah.
Oh my goodness, to hear Glenn Ford and thoughts of Tony Brown, thoughts of Lester Velt Middleton came to mind.
Yes.
And I'm like, holy cow, this is something. I will definitely try to take some time out today to pour libations in their honor. It's always a pleasure to hear from you, sir. I had to check in. It's been a while since we last communicated, but I hadn't forgotten about
you. No, I know you haven't, Brother Lutz. I appreciate you, man.
All good vibes from Central Alabama to you and all other parts of this country, and hoping that all of us can eventually unify our efforts.
That's
and
right.
Stand strong and have that nation that is under our feet once and for all together. So thank you so very much for picking my call, and we'll be tuning in more.
All right, brother.
Future.
Well,
thank
next
you
year.
So very much.
Well, listen, next, see, Renoco was supposed to be on my program next week, Friday the 13th. And, you know, from Kemet. He's going to call me, which would at 11 o'clock here would be 5 o'clock, 5 p.m. in Kemet. And we were going to have conversation for the 2 hours, you know. Well, another brother who just came back from Kemet, and he's been on the program. He's a writer. You can check him out in the Your Black World and other syndications, and that is Brother Bashir Muhammad Pata Akinyele.
Okay.
He will be my guest on the 13th. And we will talk about Renoco.
Make sure,
yes, please do. Make sure you listen, because he went to Kemet with Oshua Kwesi and his wife. And you know how thorough of a presentation that Oshua Kwesi does is outstanding as well. So that's next week, Friday. And I'll talk more about that, you know. So
very good.
All right,
very
dear brother.
We'll definitely tune in, brother. Thank you so very much. Asante sana.
Asante sana. 646, good afternoon.
Oshie, what's going on, brother?
Well, listen, Jay, I appreciate you, man. I know you were the one that gave me the call on Monday evening, man, and I appreciate that. And I just continue to call people and to send information about it to let them know that Baba Renoco has made his transition, and I appreciate that, Jay.
Well, you know, brother, I know how much he meant to you, and I know how hard it is for you, but his loss. But, you know, that's what happened with the great, you know?
Yeah.
So all you can do is do the presentation like you're doing yourself to honor the brother.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm going to do a, you know, hopefully, you know, my spirit and the spirit of him will guide me, and I'll present to us, this listening audience, to African Perspective audience and brothers and sisters who call in, and do him some justice, to present Renoco Rashidi and give him a good presentation.
Well, brother, I can tell just listening to you right now how brokenhearted you are, like so many other brothers and sisters are.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, you know, like I said, when you, you know, I considered him a friend, and I know he considered me a friend, you know.
Right.
We communicated. He's been on the program, you know, and.
Oh, yeah, he's been on the program. Believe me, I don't like him.
Yeah, when you made him hang up.
hey, listen, that, I'm not going to do that, so go ahead. Now, what was you saying?
No, I was saying that, you know, that I want to do him some justice by presenting the information and gathering more information and other little clips and feeds of his presentation. You know, he wasn't a, what he always did is just, he talked about the photographs that he had taken, the places he had been, the people who he had networked with. He talked about the history that he uncovered, going to Kemet, going to the museums, going into the temples. He photographed everything. He had documentation. He was a primary researcher. He established and substantiated the African presence in the world. You know, he did it.
I think that was one of the greatest things about him, was his documentation.
Yeah.
I mean, no, you know, very few people did it like him.
That's right.
In regards to the documentation of our history.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, much respect for that. But not only the scholarship, but that form of scholarship where he was able to show and prove. Because mm-hmm. nobody was definitely going to be able to come and question him once he said that this what the deal was.
Right.
And I really, now that's the one thing I respect about him. And you know he learned that from Dr. Clark.
Yeah.
And Dr. Ben,
right.
Because of the nature of this white man and how the white man always want to refute
mm-hmm.
your information.
Right.
So I got to give him mad respect for that, because, you know, ain't nobody was going to come talk no bull sugar honey iced tea to him
right.
about, no, the African didn't do this and the African didn't do that. And, you know, to be honest with you, that's what we need, so that our children could have the type of information and resources when they dealing with these salt teams.
Yeah.
You always want to be able to never let the salt team tell you that what you're saying isn't true, because he's always going to question the validity of what you're saying, based on it will only expose his racist ass for who and what he is, and he never wants to be in that position,
right.
Because then he has to justify his evil.
And it can't be done. They can't do it. That's why, you know, that's why they challenge the so-called critical race theory. They challenge other stuff in history. They're saying we're being divisive when we bring up the truth. You know, I'm quite sure they had some issues with Raoul Peck's documentary, Exterminate All the Brutes. I'm quite sure they did. You know, I'm quite sure they have a problem with the history of us, because they've always challenged us. That's why we owe a great debt of gratitude. And I need to do a presentation on Dr. Diop and Shiganta Jop. It's pronounced Jop, along with Dr. Thelophilia Obenga, who argued on our behalf persuasively in 1974 at the Cairo Symposium of who the ancient Kemetic people were, proving they were African, they were black people, proving. And then, of course, the documentary that I've been pushing, Great Pyramid K, 2019, just substantiates it. It's proof. So no more discussion needed. Got a couple more calls. Just hang.
So what's funny, oh,
what's that, Jay?
The only time people I ever hear say something bad about Diop is him marrying that white woman.
Yeah, he married the white woman. I know. But otherwise, we owe
him.
He was on point. I got some other callers. Just hang on with me, Jay. Thank you.
All right, brother.
Unknown caller. Good afternoon.
Good morning, Brother Archie, and good morning to Brother Jay and to all your listeners.
Thank you, Brother Paul.
Yeah. You know, let me get into it. You know, I send my highest gratitude and condolences to the nova of our great and honourable Renoka Rashidi. It's amazing. I sit here and think, you know, and I think this man who came from America, the world, I've actually met twice on his visits to the UK. Before I met him, I'm well aware of his name because so-called conscious movement, his name was well known.
Yeah.
You know, Baba Ochi, to realize with these type of examples of men that they have to be held in high esteem. And I tell you why. You know, it's not easy, the easiest of things for a person to travel out of their comfort zone and just openly go and meet people they don't really know. And, I listen to a lot of radio stations around the world, and people within their own countries are even trying to phone up their own radio stations. people who speak the same tongue and come from the same issues, they're frightened.
Right.
I mean, come on, man. They'll make every excuse that they're frightened, let alone travel around the world and meet people you don't know, you don't really understand, and just engage with them and win over their confidence. That's a special type of person.
Yeah.
That is a very, very, despite what people may think and say and judge him, that is a brave person. You see, Father always says the mouth can say anything. Can people can say anything? They say, they talk tough. But when it comes down to it, he's set an example of who we used to be. The people who were not afraid. We knew that this earth was ours and we're not afraid to go anywhere and document it and record it unapologetically. And I think, you know, we give him credit for that.
Yeah,
and like I say, before I even met him, I right here in London, I heard his name many times. People have been on with him to the museums many times. I heard his name, you know, all these tours he used to do in the British Museum. I heard a person talk out of context about him. Everybody always had great things to say about him, and this is even before, you know, social media.
Mm-hmm. Right, that's right. That's right.
How I
learned about Renoko was I was doing presentations on our people, about our people, particularly in antiquity. A brother named LeGrand Clegg, who is a city council. Well, he's an attorney and city council person of Compton, California. He made a documentary, When Black Men Ruled. When Black Men Ruled, and he had Renoko has one of the resource people. Dr. Charles Finch. I think there was another person too, if I can remember. But I had both of those DVDs. One was a short one that I played mostly, and the other one's a longer version. And that's how I was introduced to Renoko. And then at an ASCAC meeting, when Renoko was involved with ASCAC, I believe it was in Cleveland, or I believe it's in Ohio someplace. But anyway, that's where I introduced myself to him, and we became friends. We became friends at the time. We hung out. I invited him to Milwaukee. He did presentations in Milwaukee. You know, wherever he was, if he was close, I'd go check him out. He was a good brother. And when I went to L.A. to the street festival, largest so-called street festival in the country at Watts, in Watts in L.A., you know, I went by his house to talk with him and, you know, all the books all around that he had, man, and tapes and so forth. Just a dynamic man, you know, a man who went around the world, who made tremendous sacrifices to document and to substantiate our presence in the world. Just dynamic, man. Dynamic, man. Let me get another caller here, Paul. 469. Good afternoon.
Hey, Brother Oshie, Kevin.
Hey, Kevin. How are you today, brother?
All right. Yeah, I know you're very sad, and we all are. It's a great loss. Mm-hmm. He, Glenn Ford, also Paul Goss. Are you familiar with him?
No, I'm not.
Paul Goss was a naturopath over Newbody in Compton, California.
Mm.
You know, great man. Renoco was great. I first saw him in 89 at the Third Eye Conference in Dallas when they had the Ramses exhibit.
Oh, okay. I remember
in
that.
In Dallas.
Yeah.
And we talked about that.
Mm-hmm.
He, I do tours down in Greenwood, or I was, I may give that up, because of the resurgence of COVID. And I tell people about Rosa Parks, about how she didn't just stand up and that was organized. And her record was so clean that they couldn't get anything on her.
Mm-hmm.
And I say that is to say the same thing about Renoco.
Right.
Renoco, when you went to see his lectures, he wasn't as animated as some of the other other scholars. But the information, you know, not only the written documents, but like you said, he took pictures of everything.
Of everything, the visual, you know?
Yeah, and so when he presented his point of view or whatever, there was no way that you could dispute it because he had tons of information that would verify what he said. I know that he said that Van Sertima told him that you need to make sure you have at least three pieces of evidence to substantiate your point of view.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't do that. He had 20, 30, 40, or 50 pieces of information.
Yeah.
So he was very, 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 very thorough. Yeah. So he will definitely be missed. And, you know, I reach out to you because I know how close he was to you. And actually, you know, and I used to kid you all when I called in and said that when he was on your show, he interviewed you more than he interviewed him.
That's right. The last time we were together, he did.
He would do that. He's a good brother. I had opportunity to see him several times, and he will be missed.
Yeah.
But his spirit, you know, and this is a good thing. His spirit will live on because we will not allow it to die.
Ashe.
So I'm going to get off the phone and allow someone else to get in.
Thank you,
Oshie.
No, thank you, Brother Kevin. Appreciate you, man. Thank you. Yeah. Brothers, you know, and sisters, I appreciate y'all. I know I'm coming to the ending of the program. I will, like I said, prepare a presentation that is dignified and just for a brother who I have so much admiration for. And also to next week Friday, my guest will be Bashir Muhammad Patah Akinyele, who just came back from, in fact, he was telling me that people were saying, oh, Renoco's coming in, and they were going out, you know. Renoco was coming in and they were going out. And so we'll talk about his trip and his work with ASCAC in Newark, New Jersey, and his understanding of Renoko Rashidi. Once again, for Brother Glenn Ford and Brother Renoko, you always want somebody to step up and continue the work, to build on the work, to take it to another level. I know for me, when I was president of organizations and in the community doing work and so forth, it wasn't that I wanted glory and accolades. I wanted to do the work. I wanted to take it to another level and work with somebody who will take it to the next level. Take it to the next level. So I'm hoping people stand up, and I know that Sister Kimberly and those over at Black Agenda Report will continue the work that Glenn Ford has established, along with Brother Dixon, who also made his transition of presenting the information that is always contrary to this government's position, whether it's Democrat or Republican. And I know that the work that Renoko has done, hopefully somebody, these young men, that's, like I said, that last interview I played for you, he's working with that young man, and he said that, our Warrior Scholar said that if we find somebody, some young person, that's what we want. We want to encourage them, nurture them, motivate and guide them to take it to the next level. Because if it doesn't happen, brothers and sisters, it dies. If it doesn't happen in this system, because they don't want this system to have that kind of information. They don't want this. This system wants to control your mind. They don't want to put in knowledge of yourself to make you, help you understand who you really are and how great you are. So look for that. All I can say, I thank you, Brother Paul. Appreciate you, man. Brother Jay, Brother Lusk, all of you, Sister Nabantu, Sister Aiba, and all those who call and listen to this program. We end this program like we end all of our programs, with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure in the hell, damn it, don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, thank you for listening. Join me on Friday. Appreciate it. Until that time, Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Bibi Vahodie. Bibi Vahodie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. You have a blessed and wonderful day. Peace, family.
Hey.